Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Sok Ning Tan, and you're listening to Sorry Partner.
Hello, and welcome to Sorry Partner, a podcast about bridge and all things interesting to bridge players. Brought to you by bridge partners and friends, Catherine Harris and Jocelyn Starts. On today's program, we talk with Singaporean champion Sok Ning Tan about the secret to improving your game and the importance of being on the same page as your partner. Plus, she shares her top tip for developing players. But first, let's kibitz. Hi, partner. How are you, Jocelyn?
I'm very well, Catherine. How are you?
Jocelyn, I am very well, though still reeling from a trauma that recently occurred at the Bridge Club.
Oh, so can I help you deal with your post-traumatic stress disorder?
I'm very much hoping that you can. A while ago on this very podcast, I believe we discussed a related issue. I'll set the scene. I'm at the Bridge Club. I'm playing east-west. I move to the next table, south, sitting there, no shoes on. Me, not happy. You should have seen the state of these feet. It was just disgusting.
Catherine, why did you continue looking at the feet? You needed to look somewhere else. You cannot look at the feet.
That is a fair point. But there was something about the setup at this table. This guy was quite tall, so he had his legs poking through. You know, there were like convention cards everywhere and paper and drinks and this, like they had spread the space they were taking up, managed to encompass the whole table area. So yes, I didn't literally need to be looking at his feet, but frankly, they were hard to avoid and they were revolting.
Oh my goodness.
And I was mindful because I think we did discuss this quite a while back now that you had come across someone at the table.
Yes. Sounds kind of familiar.
Yes.
And it's just always a bit like, look away. It's like the train tracks in New York City, the subway. You don't want to look at those ever.
Absolutely. Though, to just extend that metaphor, it's part of the milieu of the subway. And even though at times you might see something you don't want to see, it still somehow fits within your notion of what that experience is. This was very much outside of what I wanted my experience to be. I know, it was weird
right.
Because, you know, I'm not one of those. Some people are funny about feet, like they don't want to see feet. I don't mind, whatever. But these feet were not right. And I did not like, I just grubby. I just felt like somehow everything was tainted.
as I said, because it was emblematic, I thought, you know, is this somebody who's up on their personal hygiene? Let's put it that way. It was just not right. And I did wish maybe in that instance that there was some kind of dress code at the club, because I did not enjoy it.
Or at least a shoe rule.
Yeah, though, frankly, had he been wearing thongs or flip-flops, as you call them,
you'd still see the feet.
You'd still see the feet.
You'd see them, but you wouldn't have to see them making contact with the floor.
True.
So there's something about the combination,
yes,
of the physically unattractive foot making intimate contact with the floor in a bridge club.
And I think, again, it's what it represents. I mean, I don't literally care if the foot is on the floor, but I think if somebody has gone to the trouble of putting on some kind of foot covering, let's call it a shoe, they are making a nod to understanding that they're around other people and that they will observe certain mores, what have you. The absence suggested the introduction of an element of chaos. And I was very nervous about being in this person's proximity.
Maybe it's all part of a strategy, a brilliant strategy, to discombobulate the opponents. Did this person win the game?
They did win the game.
See?
Yes. Yes. I think you're onto something.
Yes. So it's very strategic. When I've worn my Birkenstocks, which reveal my toes, I've never really thought about whether my toes would gross somebody out. But Birkenstocks are not that far from a flip-flop.
Well, this is true. The key question, though, Jocelyn, is do you win when you wear your Birkenstock?
I never win. So the answer to that would be no.
Three letters for us today, Jocelyn.
How utterly thrilling.
It is thrilling. Our first letter is from our good friend Adam Vildavsky.
Oh, hello, Adam.
Hi, Adam. This letter, short one, about unintentional psychs. He says, I don't have many of these, but my most effective one was when I picked up a 12 count with two spades and five hearts. I meant to open one heart as dealer, but saw that I had put down the one spade card on the table. Partner held a six count with 2-2 in the majors, and the opponents had no way to find their spade fit. I felt bad for them, he says. Sure you did, Adam. That's fantastic. Brilliant.
It's a great story. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. That's wonderful.
I feel very bad for your opponents.
Yeah, maybe not so bad. Our next letter, Jocelyn, is from Ellen, another friend of the show.
Oh, hi, Ellen.
Hey, Ellen. It was good to see you recently. Ellen and I had a game together.
Yes.
Ellen writes, today at our local club, I was playing with my 13-year-old partner, Eli. I was Eli's teacher in elementary school a few years ago and discovered that his father, Michael Schuster, was a professional bridge player. We formed a friendship and now I play with him regularly. As usual, when players sit down against us, they ask Eli in a patronizing but kind voice about how long he's been playing and how old he is. Today someone said, oh, Eli, we're so glad you came out to play. To which Eli replied, I didn't come out to play, I came to win.
That's the spirit.
Ellen says he often does. He's the next Mex drop.
Yay!
And our last letter today, Jocelyn, comes from Irving in the UK. I was playing online. I opened one heart, the opponent on my left passed, my partner passed, and my right-hand opponent passed. So it's heart, pass, pass, pass. So there I was in one heart. Then my left-hand opponent said she was trying to bid. And I think they must have been on camera. She kept banging on the keyboard and saying, I can't seem to bid. This went on for a little while. We weren't entirely sure what she was trying to do as the auction had finished, but eventually we said to her, well, perhaps you should leave the table, meaning for her to log out and log in again, because I think they thought she was having some sort of technical trouble. But she actually got up and left the table, which was rather amusing. It certainly had us laughing, not only because she literally left the table, but because she hadn't recognized that the program wouldn't let her bid because the auction had been passed around to me. Oh, gosh. I mean, these things used to happen all the time back in the early days of online bridge, but she obviously hasn't had much experience playing online.
That is so funny.
It's so funny. It reminds me of that letter we had a while ago where there was a long delay at the table, and when the person finally returned, her partner asked what had happened, and she'd said she'd had to go outside to feed the horses.
It's totally normal.
Of course. Happens all the time.
So if you have any fun stories about feet or unintentional psych bids or playing with a 13-year-old who comes to win or snafus with online bridge, please send them to us at sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our contact details on our website at sorrypartner.com, along with some other good stuff.
Coming up next, our interview with Sok Ning Tan.
Singaporean champion Sok Ning Tan made her bridge debut in 2011 at the Southeast Asian Games, where she clinched 2 silver medals. She represented Singapore on the women's team at the 2021 Asia-Pacific Bridge Championships and represented Singapore on the open team at the 2022 World Bridge Championships. In 2022, she took home bronze in the mixed teams competition at the Asian Games. We began by asking if she'd had any interesting hands lately.
So I was playing in a local event and I came across a very interesting hand. And I was partnering someone for the first time. Yep. So we sat down and we exchanged convention notes. We had some discussions and practiced a while online. But it was really the first time playing together. And then I opened 1-0 trump. And the opponents overcalled a 2-club, which was alerted as any single suit. So we've not had any discussions on how to manage interference over 1-0 trump. And then she bidded a 3-spades and then it came back to me. So at this time, I was pondering what 3-spades could be because 2-clubs being any single suit, some people play system on since you could always double to show stamen and all the other bids in your system would still be available. Alternatively, 3-spades could mean a strong spades natural game force hand. So I looked at my hand. I had king, 9-4 card spades. I think I had a double turn, heart, and a 4-3s in the minus. And I thought, okay, so what do I think her hand might be? So I was really down to a pure guess and I decided that, okay, it's system on. So 3-spades would show 5-4 in the minus and a singleton spade. So I thought, okay, I'll just have a shot at 3-0. And also because I felt that 3-0 trump was more likely to make than 5 minor. So I bid at 3-0 trump and I explained to the opponents that we didn't really agree. It could be either meaning. Yeah. And then when dummy was laid down, so I received a heart lead, dummy was laid down and my partner had 5-card good spades, queen jack. So we were missing the ace. She had queen 10 double turn hearts versus my 3 small card hearts. And I was like, okay, it's fine. You know, I know this is not very good, but okay, I'll just play on. So I played small. I played 10 and then she followed with the ace. And then, of course, I followed small. And I was like bracing myself, you know, how best to, you know, salvage this contract by not going down so much. And then the opponent returned a diamond. Okay, then I thought, okay, that's cool. So I won with the ace. But I still had the task of removing the ace of spade, which was in the opponent's hand. So I played a small spade. And then my right-hand opponent won with the ace. And he returned, I think he returned the club, which then I won. And then I basically had 9 tricks. So what had happened was that he had a singleton ace. And actually his partner was void in diamonds. And so I made 3 no trumps. And 4 spades was going down because of the diamonds void. So that was a very lucky and interesting board. And after I finished playing it, my left-hand opponent said to me, yeah, and 4 spades was going down and I was feeling so sad, you know, so apologetic. I said, yeah, I'm really sorry, but you know, this was one of the very rare times that you make a lucky, you're such lucky that, you know, nothing could stop you. But I really feel sad for my opponent.
That's very nice of you. Did you? So was it Hearts? Was Hearts the single?
Yes, it was.
Hearts. Yeah, was and, Hearts.
Yeah, I think that's an A.
That could have been very bad.
Wow.
Well, Lady Luck just decided to call, so it was lucky, and a hand I'll remember for some time to come.
Wow. So from now on, you have an agreement with this partner that when there's been two clubs interference, three spades means system's on or?
System on, system yeah. On. We'll play system on, except when two clubs is showing both majors.
Ah, wow. Okay. So you have to have a variable defense.
Mm.
Can you take us back to your bridge beginnings and share with our listeners how you learned to play?
Yeah, okay. So I first came into contact in contract bridge at a high school gathering. And, seniors and juniors, we attended together and people were just playing casually. But in Singapore, people normally play a version that is called floating bridge, which is not quite the contract bridge, where you could randomly select your partner by naming a particular card in the deck. And the player who holds that card in the deck would be your partner. And throughout the game, you will be perhaps guessing or trying to deduce who your partner, because only the person who has that card that you indicated would know that he is your partner. And the other three people would be guessing who is actually partnering who. And then in the middle of the game, you then figure out who is partnering who. And at the end, you total up the tricks that your side has made. So this is quite a popular version of bridge play in Singapore. And at that time, yeah, I thought it was a very cool and interesting game. And then I finished my A levels, and typically there is a 6 months to 7 months waiting before I enrolled in the university. So I had a lot of free time and I thought that this was quite an interesting game. And I went to the library to read more about it. Went home with some books and then tried to, play with cards. And at that time, we didn't have all these apps, software that you could play with robot to get you started. So literally, I was reading the book and then laying down the cards on the table and on my bed and then trying to figure out, how things work. So that was how I got started. And when I went into the university, they had a bridge club. So I went to the bridge club. And then I got a friend to come with me to play. So we started playing together as beginner players. And then the seniors would guide us and things like that. Yeah, that was how I started. But I also met my current husband, at the bridge club. And he was a much better player, even though we were in the same year in the university. But he had started playing earlier. So he was better. And then we knew each other. And then time on and off, we started to play with each other for casual games, but he always had his more serious games when he plays with the more experienced players. Yeah, so it then continued from there.
So when you went to the University Bridge Club, what system were they mostly playing there?
Oh, I think mostly people started off with SAYC, and then later on, the seniors say, okay, probably it's easier to play 2-over-1 because then you always know when you have a game for situation.
Sure.
Yeah, so we play a very simple 2-over-1. And that's what a lot of people do.
So had you taught yourself standard American by the time you went along, or were you still expecting some kind of floating bridge?
No, I think by the time I went to the library and I got my hands on those books, it was clear that floating bridge was not really the real stuff. Yeah. And then, it brought me through. Okay. So in a real bridge situation, you have a fixed partner and the dummy lays down his hand. So I already knew these rules when I went to the bridge club. Yeah.
I have to say though, that sounds like so much fun.
It sounds like fun, but it sounds confusing.
Maybe in a social setting, the floating bridge version would have been more fun because there's that suspense and the element of a mystery in the game, which then gets you excited.
So once you were playing regularly at the University Bridge Club, at that point, what was it that really fascinated you about the game?
I think it was also the social aspect of the game, that you could go for matches with your university mates and also perhaps to just get some distraction from the schoolwork itself. Yeah. And I think most people, we also think that, you know, it's also fun, it's entertaining. And at those times in the late 90s, we don't really have so much of those games that kids are exposed to today, where you get instant gratification. You just pick up your cell phone. You've got so many apps to choose from to get the distraction. So back then, yeah, having even a cell phone was a luxury. Yeah, well, most of us just carry pagers. And if we want internet access, we got to go home and, you know, use our own desktop, you know, to get the connectivity. So I think that the forms of entertainment and the way that we socialize with each other is really through that face-to-face interaction. Unlike today where you could just be messaging your friends whole day long. Yeah. I mean, back then, we really depended more on the real face-to-face meeting, sitting down and really playing cards physically.
Did you ever find it so engrossing and distracting from your studies that it was a problem?
I think not quite. But I remember that as a group, we said that, you know, before the exams, 1 month before, we would really stop and abstain. Yeah, and when we said abstain, we really abstain because, again, there were no apps. So you had to meet people physically to really play. So then we abstained from playing and we just concentrated on the studies. But when the exams were over, then of course people met up so frequently, right? More than what normally we would do during the term time to play. And sometimes we go down to the Singapore Contract Bridge Association to play as well in the holidays because there are morning games. Yeah. And then there was always a student discount. So we pay something like perhaps $2 and then we could actually play a morning session, which was actually fun and very affordable for students.
When you played bridge at university, was it also a bit informal? Like, were there people there just hanging out? And I'm curious about the atmosphere, I guess, and were there formal and informal games going on at the same time?
Okay, so I recall at my time, we had two games every week. So one game would be a duplicate, yeah, and the other game would be for players who are more interested to further their games. So it would be still, it's not the duplicate format, but you can actually come down and play and there will be the more experienced players who might actually be walking around observing what happens at the table and then giving you tips on the spot. Yeah. So it was also always free and easy. And even for duplicate games, it ended quite late. So I never really stayed till the end of the duplicate. So you can imagine that towards the end, right, then people start leaving and then you can't really have like the full proper results for that game. But somehow, I think they always managed to publish the results to say, you know, who came and who had an average plus, average minus for leaving early and things like that. So, yeah.
And then how did you start playing regularly at a competitive level outside of university?
Oh, okay. So after I left university, I just played on and off and I didn't really have a regular like partner. Yeah. And I was just playing the very casual games, you know, in the Singapore bridge scene with my boyfriend then because he always had a more serious team to play in. And I was just like, oh, you know, yeah, we could spend a weekend playing some fun events and then, you know. It was a date plus also a bridge game. And then soon we got married and then I had my first kid. And then at that time, that was in 2011, the Southeast Asian Games to be held in Indonesia featured contract bridge. So that was a very interesting opportunity because it never had a mind sport like bridge being featured in those major games. And then it got a lot of people excited, including myself. I thought, hey, you know, why not just give it a chance? And then I was very lucky to be chosen to be in the ladies' team. I was the youngest player in the team. And I was so lucky that I could partner a very, very good and a very nice lady. She was 70 plus years old at that time. So she must be 40 plus years older than me. And of course, much wiser and much better in her skill. And what really struck me was that despite her age at that time, she was very sharp. Yeah. And even today till now, I think she's 80 plus today. She's still playing online, even though her body is already physically not so strong. She can't come to the clubhouse, but I still see her playing online from time to time. So So that was my first step at the competitive bridge. And after that, I thought that, okay, it's quite fun. I'll continue. But then I was pregnant again with my second kid. So I decided that, okay, I think it's a little bit too much. I want to concentrate on raising a family. So I disappeared from the bridge scene till perhaps maybe 3-4 years ago, when yet another opportunity came, which was the Asian Games, which was on a much bigger scale than the Southeast Asian Games. So I think everybody was again very interested, and including myself. Actually, I wasn't so interested because I had stopped playing for a long time, and managing a full-time job plus raising two kids was already very, very challenging for me. And we as a couple didn't have much of a help from our parents nor our in-laws. So it was very much just ourselves plus two young kids. But my husband was trying to get into the open team, but somehow he didn't manage to pass through the trials. So he came back after after the results of the open team trials. And then he said to me that the mixed trials would be the next coming up. So I also felt that since my husband was so passionate about bridge, then I should also try to help him to qualify. So that was when I came out of my sabbatical from bridge. Yeah, but it wasn't easy. It was very tough, and I really lost touch because I really stopped playing, and I've not even been like playing the online games and whatnot. And it was a few months that I had to try to get up to speed, but it was a tough journey. And even after I got selected into the team, I felt that my performance was still not very good. And in the actual Asian Games itself, I played very few boards because I think my teammates thought that the chance was better if better players actually played more. Yeah. But actually, because of there was also some reshuffling of the players after the trials, so ended up my husband went back to the open team and I stayed in a super mixed team, which was a girl partnership and a guy partnership would be in the same team. So I ended up in the super mixed team instead. And I played very little. And that time, I felt that, I think typically, I don't know, people might actually protest that why didn't they play their fair share? You know, why did some players play more? And I felt that I didn't want to protest too much. But of course, I felt disappointed because I had taken many days of leave to be there and away from both of my very young kids. But I only played very little. So that set me also thinking perhaps it is actually not something that I really want to pursue. And I came back to play, you know, mainly because of my husband. I wanted to keep his passion. But then ended up, we didn't play together. And then I found myself in this situation, which I didn't quite enjoy. And of course, not a good use of my time. Then I thought that, okay, maybe I would just go back to my previous lifestyle of just raising my kids and then focusing on the family. But then after I came back to Singapore, then some friends actually said that they wanted to form another team and asked me to join them.
So besides the fact that there's a social aspect that you really enjoyed and that it was a great distraction while you were at university from your studies, what was it about this game that really drew you in?
I think it is the fun and the challenge and making your mind work a little harder. That might sound strange to someone who doesn't play bridge. Why would someone want to use the brain so much when thinking about having a hobby or spending some recreation time? But personally, I think I would enjoy it to have, you know, to solve a little puzzle or to try to figure out what's happening, to get my brain to work a little bit in that space. So I think that's what's interesting. And no two hands are ever the same. So I think, yeah, and sometimes you have the element of luck. You might think that you have done everything perfectly and aligned with the chance and the probabilities. But, you know, it's just like in life. You never know what's going to happen. You might plan for something and then something unexpected really happens and then it brings you on a different course in life. So I think bridge is very much the same. Yeah. You always get surprises.
And now for a short break. And remember, if you don't like the ads, you can sign up for ad-free episodes on our website.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're back.
So during that time when you took a break from Bridge, you know, systems are always changing. The game is always evolving. I imagine that given how much you enjoy the intellectual challenge of the game, you welcomed that. But how did you manage adapting your game to all those changes?
Well, it was quite a lot of change indeed. So I was playing Polish Club with my husband before I came back. Yeah. And we've been playing it for a long time. So when we came back, then naturally I said that let's just continue with what we've been using. But I think it has evolved a lot. And my husband was already having the belief that it wasn't such a good system after all. In the beginning, when we played again, when we used Polish Club, we actually liked it and we had great fun playing it as well. But then when I came back, he thought that it wasn't so good. And then he wanted to change to Precision. He said that it would enhance our chance of qualifying in the trials. And I was a player that wasn't very good in my card play. I always preferred to have a better system and better BDA to help me reach the correct contract so that I don't have to struggle so hard to play a very thin contract. So that was my strength. And of course, the card play being my weakness. And so in the very limited time that we had to the trials, it was easier for me to learn a new system than to, say, improve my card play by a lot. Yeah, to get the same kind of end result. So I learned Precision in about a month. And then we went to the trials with Precision. And since then, I've been playing Precision. But it wasn't easy because it was like within a short time, I had to learn it. And yeah, there were a lot of like artificial beats and so on. So that was adapting that was had to be done.
It sounds like you would say that card play is an area of weakness, and bidding and complicated bidding systems is an area of strength. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that was how I perceived myself then. Yeah.
Then.
Yes.
Has that changed?
I think being conscious of my weakness means that I devoted a lot of time to try to overcome my weaknesses. And in preparation for the recent Asian Games, I put in quite a lot of time and effort to overcome this weakness of mine. People who have teamed me would have gotten their experiences that, oh, you know, I had actually gone down on the cold game and this has happened too many times.
Okay.
And there was something that I was also very eager to say, I don't want to continue to have my teammates feel this way about me. And my partner to feel this way about me. So I really put in quite a lot of effort to overcome this weakness of mine. I'm still not perfect, but I think I'm better than what I used to be.
So we need your plan of attack, because we also want to improve. And I think our listeners also want to improve our card play, all of us. So can you explain or take us through what your program was to improve the card play? Was it memorizing card combinations, or do you practice on Bridge Master?
Right. So what worked for me was, I think, counting. So my Asian Games partner, at one stage, I think we recognized that card play was a weakness in our partnership. So he also tried to help me overcome this. But I think a lot of it is the individual, whether you want to improve this for yourself or not. I think I started off with the Bridge Master in Bridge Base Online, which actually comes free now to everyone. So it comes in level 1 to 5, and then you can work yourself progressively upwards. And everything there is very logical. And I also play other online platforms like Xinrei. There's a Chinese and an English version. And you could always replay the hand, or you could see how other people has played the hand. So I think that also helps. And always review the bidding and ask yourself what has been shown or not shown in the bidding to deduce the distribution and whether you got the lead that you were expecting or not. And the thing about playing against robots is that they hardly force card. So based on that, you could deduce a lot of information. But of course, at the real table, people can force card. So you've got to also take that into account. And by playing all these online events, right, in Xinrei and so on, then you get to see your percentage score as well. And you could see whether was it because of good luck or bad luck, or did you know that you played badly. And by counting, I think counting to 13, if you do it consciously, but it's mentally very taxing on a match that you have to consciously count every suit, every high card point. Yeah, but sometimes this is what it takes, and practicing does help. I don't think there's a shortcut. I put in more hours and more hard work to overcome my slightly less talented brain to make up for it. So I'm sorry, ladies, there's no secret. It's all hard work.
Oh, that wasn't what we wanted. We wanted the magic. We wanted the secret password.
On the theme of developing your game, I know that at one point you had some training with Simon Device, who was a guest on our program.
Yes.
How did you come to be connected to Simon, and how did you work together with your team?
Okay, so one of our team knew Simon, and they are on pretty good terms. So we also had a budget to hire a coach. So we reached out to Simon through this teammate, and Simon was very kind to agree to coach our team. And throughout this journey, I think he really opened up our perspectives and showed us there's a lot of things that we don't even think that would be a concern or an area of discussion. So our training consisted of reviewing the online hands that we played. And also, he would give us very teamed bidding practices. The Bridge 72 practices were divided into teams, and they were not just random hands. So there would be a theme on, say, opponents opening a 2 diamonds multi-opening, or opponents opening a level 3 preamp. Then how do you proceed from there? What is your best course of action depending on the probability? So they were very organized in teams. And then after that, we could review and see how our teammates have bidded. He will also compare with how the Dutch team have bidded. And from there, he also shared with us his analysis of, based on probabilities, this is likely going to be the best course of action. And that was something that was very useful, because we all come across all these situations, but somehow we don't really know what's the best way to deal with it. Intuitively, we may think that, okay, maybe a double will work, or maybe you pass and hope that partner make a balancing double, but we never really knew what was the best course of action. And when you play high-level competitive bridge, it's not your normal 1-spade, 2-spade, 4-spade speeding that determines whether you win or you lose. It is all these very thin decisions that you make, the high level bidding that do you bid, do you double or do you pass, that maybe determines all that swings. So he really allows us to have the opportunity to deep dive into all these situations and forces the partnership to have the discussions that, okay, when we have this situation, this is what we will do. And when we bid maybe three or four of a major, it means we have four cards or five cards. And so we could increase the bidding accuracy so that we don't leave it that much to chances anymore. So I think that is a very valuable part of the training.
So it sounds like you enjoyed it. You'd do it again, yes?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And towards the end, he was giving us more and more practices. And I think that was really helping us to reach the peak. Yeah. I think from the time before and after we had the coaching, I also felt that the team's overall performance improved when we played against the other regional teams. So that was really, I think we really owe him a lot to our success. Yeah, in the Asian Games.
Do you have a favorite tournament that you love to play?
I can think of a tournament, but it's an online tournament. So during COVID, pretty much, you know, we were in lockdown and the Bridge Club was closed. And then, of course, people flocked to online for their daily dose and weekly dose of contract bridge. And so we were also the same. And there was this online, it is still a running event in Bridge Base Online. I think it is called Hello from Alberta. It's an IMS pairs event. And at the time that we were playing, I think there were 100 pairs or more players playing every day.
Hello from Alberta.
Yes. But we were playing a lot of it on weekends during COVID. And as an online tournament, you don't really know what opponents you will get. So sometimes you get lucky balls. Or sometimes you play against lucky opponents and then you get a very bad score. So the results were quite varying. And my husband and I were saying that, you know, we played it so many times, but we have never won it. But he encouraged me by saying that, don't worry, we will just continue to play until we win it. And after he said that, we played a couple few more times and then we actually came in first. But after we won first, he said, okay, since we have already won the tournament, we shall stop playing it. Yeah, so we stopped playing it.
Going back to your bridge training, is there a bridge book that you have gone back to a number of times or a book that you might recommend to a developing player?
Okay. I have read a number of books and I have quite a good bridge library at home because my husband obviously, he's very into the game and we have a good collection of books at home. But there's one book that stood out for me, which is not a book on the technicalities of the game. The title of the book is Tricks of the Trade by Larry Cohen. And this book was recommended to me by my husband when I was in between partnerships. So at that time, I recall I had ended my partnership, or rather my partner had ended our partnership. And I felt maybe at a loss. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And then he asked me to read this book. And then this book talked about the softer aspects of the game, how one should conduct oneself in the bridge scene, how you should treat your partner, how a partnership should be about, how you manage your team and your teammates, and how do you observe people playing bridge to understand the other people better, and perhaps then you can have a better shot at finding your next partner. And then it also talks about when you play high-level competitive bridge, where some people might resort to some kind of cheating or unethical means to get good results, and how these things may actually give you some short-term benefit but actually damage your reputation, which could be irreversible and very damaging to your reputation and your bridge career. So it talks about all these things, and I find that they are very practical tips because we think that bridge is, you know, about accuracy in card play, in bidding, in defense. But actually, many a times we are playing bridge with human beings. Unless you say that you want to play bridge with robots all your life, then I think you can forget about that book, because robot is always perfect. They make the perfect double dummy analysis. A robot will never scold you for making a mistake on the table. But we're all playing with human beings. And I think that aspect cannot be overlooked. And it is actually a very important. So I think, yeah, that is a very good read to me. And I really recommend it to everyone. And from time to time, when I feel that, you know, I have some disagreements with my partner, I may actually just pick up a book, find a relevant section and see, oh, you know, the book says that you don't have to agree everything with your partner. You can agree to disagree. You could also say that, this is my tendency. Maybe I don't want to open a week two with this kind of hand, but I completely understand and respect it if my partner likes to open a week two with this kind of hand. As long as we recognize each other's tendencies, then that is enough. We don't have to force each other to be exactly the same way. So it talks about all these things, and I think it is a very, very good book. And Larry has actually shared, you know, all his years of experience. Yeah, I'm really grateful that he has written such a wonderful book.
Sounds like it's great for marriage counseling also.
Good one.
What is the biggest schlamozzle or muck up you've ever made at the table?
Oh, a muck up at the table. Wow. Okay. I could think of last year where we played the Zone 6 Asia Pacific Bridge Federation tournament, where it was a knockout match for a qualifying spot in the World Bridge. So we were playing against Taiwan, and it was, I think, day 7 of the tournament. We had the round robin, and then we came to the knockout. And whoever won the knockout obviously would have won the spot in the Wuhan Cup. And by, I think, day 7, everyone was very tired, and I'm not really well known for like my stamina, and I was trying to, you know, still keep counting and keep myself awake at the table. And I think at a particular round, I was just drifting away. And I think for 3 or 4 consecutive bots, I made very serious mistakes. And I think in 3 to 4 bots in a row, it was perhaps maybe minus 10 ems per bot. Yeah, it was bad. Yeah. So I couldn't imagine how my teammates watching the view graph would have reacted. And my partner on the table, he might have just freaked out and fainted on the spot. But obviously, he didn't. Yeah. And then despite all that, I think we also had some wins earlier. So it was a very tight match. At the end of every round, the match was still very close. So we had like good bots, bad bots, still very close. And I think at the end of the third match or something, the match was still very close. And nobody really wanted to play the fourth set because everyone has already played 2 sets. And then the pairs were playing the fourth set would have played the third set already. Everyone was very tired. But still someone had to play, right? So I think we went with the original plan because how our team did it was that by the end of every day, we would have decided the lineup for the next day. So we said, okay, then we just go with the original lineup since everyone was very tired. So we just go with the lineup. And then at the table, I opened a 1-0 trump again. And then my opponent overcalled 2 club, which wasn't a true major. And it was supposed to be system on again. But I had forgotten about it at the table. So my partner beat a 2 hearts, which was meant to be a transfer to spades. But I had forgotten about it because I was too tired. So I promptly raised him to 4 hearts. And the opponents then competed to 5 minor and they went down. And then later on, they found out that I had not alerted my partner's beat. And it also induced them to beat the 5 minor who was going down when 4 hearts wasn't even close to making. So they called director on the hand. And actually, when my partner let out, I'm not sure, but before he started playing, I remember that I had forgotten to alert. Yeah, so I called the director and then confessed to the director quietly in case it was unauthorized information. But director said, okay, never mind, just continue. Yeah. And I know that this would be a bot, you know, that would be in contention at the end of the event. So we finished playing the bot and then we scored out everything after the 4 rounds. And then based on the score and with the 5 minor going down, taken into account, we had marginally won the whole match. But that was the match that they had, you know, already caught the director. So the director had to make a ruling on that bot. So if that board's ruling went in their favor, then we would have lost the match marginally. So everything was hanging by that board where I had made the boo-boo on the board. So we waited for the director ruling, but I think they couldn't rule quite fast. And it was already quite late into the evening since it was already four sessions of the day. So directors say that they will rule on the board and inform us of the outcome later. So we left the venue, we had our dinner, we went back to the rooms and we were still waiting for the ruling. But I think it was quite a complicated ruling also because it would directly determine the outcome of the knockout. So they took a long time and we were still waiting for the results. And my teammates didn't really want to go to bed. But I prepped myself to say that we should be praying for the best, but we need to prepare for the worst. And if the worst happens, it means that we have to play another knockout against Indonesia the next day. And everyone should just go to bed and get sleep because we need to be fresh to play the knockout if we have to. So I told everybody that I'm going to bed. Yeah, because by staying up, I won't change the outcome of the ruling. So I went to bed. But when I woke up the next day and I saw like on my phone, okay, yeah, we had won the appeal because there was a procedural penalty against the other team. Yeah, so that board was ruled in their favor, but also they had another procedural ruling. So everything came out in Singapore's favor. So we didn't have to play the playoff and we had a free day. But I think everyone in the team stayed up pretty late. And I was very apologetic because like it was my error that caused everyone to suspend, but it all turned out well.
It's so funny that both hands that you have talked about involve you open one no trump, your left hand opponent overcalls two clubs, showing a single suited hand, and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, but I think after this true experience, I will definitely remember it. And make sure that whoever I'm partnering will remember it.
Yeah, even if you only have 5 minutes before partnering with a new partner, make sure you go over what your agreement is for that sequence.
Definitely.
What is the funniest thing that's ever happened to you when you were playing bridge?
Funniest thing that has happened? Yeah, okay. So, again, back to my experience that I wasn't so good in my card play and perhaps was also my own confidence of my own card play. And I was playing the Zone 6 APBF ladies category and we reached a slam to be played by my partner. So I was quite happy that I was the dummy and the opponents led out of turn. Yeah, so then, well, of course, the director was called to the table and he presented my partner with all the options. You know, you could accept the lead and allow the dummy to be the declarer. And after the options were presented, my partner deliberated on the options. She looked at her hand and then she felt that perhaps with the hand that she was holding, it was better for me to be the declarer. So she informed the director that she will be the dummy. And I basically freaked out. Yeah, because I was looking forward to being a dummy. And my partner, a young and talented player, I felt that the chance of making the slam would have been much greater if she was, you know, in charge. But now she had made her decision and I had to be the declarer. So, but it is what it is. I have to play the hand. And fortunately, I made the hand. Yeah, but I think it didn't matter because she would have made it from her side too. But yeah, for that moment, I really freaked out.
But how nice that she showed such confidence in you, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a validating experience too.
Yeah.
And then you delivered and you came through.
Yes.
Sakning, do you have a favorite convention or gadget that you really love to use in your bidding?
Oh, yes. It's Last Train. So Simon was the one who introduced Last Train to us in our training. And it's something that we are not familiar with. I've come across it where I play with very, very good players at a Bermuda Bowl. in 2022, but I've not really understood what it is about and how it is used. But Simon actually introduced it to us and we decided that, okay, let's try to play. And in the beginning, I was still not very confident and hesitant to try it. And we decided that, okay, we should just try it. And then we practiced a lot of hands using software. And actually now I think it is really, it's a useful tool, helps you to beat slams accurately, to stay out of slams that are very marginal. So again, I have to thank Simon for introducing this to us, for my partner for pushing me to try to play something that I've not really tried before. And I'm enjoying, yeah, this very much now.
Is the hardest thing about it trying to distinguish between a real control showing bid versus the last train? Just because I would think that, I haven't used it with any partners, but I've heard great things. But I'd be so fearful that I wouldn't recognize when it's a control cue versus just a last train cue.
Yeah, it has happened before at the beginning when you're just starting to play, and then naturally your brain might think that it is a normal cue when it is supposed to be a last train. But I think it only happened in the initial phases or when you're trying it out. And I think the hardest part is to even try to embrace it in the first place. But we had confidence that, you know, it must be a good thing for Simon to actually recommend it to us, and he's also playing it himself, and to have that resistance to try it. I think that's something that maybe it comes with age, that the older we get, the more resistant we are to changes. But having said so, being conscious about the resistance means we need to consciously tell ourselves to open up to new ideas and to try new things. Otherwise, we don't know what we are missing out.
Is there a convention that you really do not like?
I think it's really up to the partnership to decide. Yeah, I may have some of my preferences, but I also want to see what is my partner's preference, because ultimately it's something that the partnership needs to own and have accountability of what you decide to use or not at the table. So it's pretty much a partnership discussion to me.
But let's say you had a new partner. Is there a convention that you really hope they're not going to want to play? Or are you pretty agnostic and you'll deal with them all?
I think typically I'm the one who wants to play in more conventions and stuff than most players. So whatever they want to play, I think I'm very open. It's more of the other way, that I think something is good and then they say that they want to keep it maybe a bit more simplified. Yeah, which I'm also fine. Yeah.
What is the best bridge tip or advice that you've ever been given?
Back to my experience where I had the luck and honor of partnering Jane, the player who is about 40 years older than myself, in the Southeast Asian Games in 2011. So she's a well-respected player, and I think it's just very, it is a good experience just to partner her and to observe how she carries herself, how she conducts herself. And during the Southeast Asian Games, which was my first major games, of course, during the tournament, there will be ups and downs. And I did, you know, share some of my thoughts and my views with her. And I can't exactly remember what I shared with her, but she listened to my concerns. She just smiled, and in a very wise and very calm tone, you know, she kind of like told me, you know, it's okay, you know, people make mistakes, teammates make mistakes. It's just part and parcel of the game. Just stay calm. And I think that the confidence and the calmness that she exhibits really shows that, you know, there's nothing that you should get very worried or very worked up at the tournament. Yeah, we could have some unhappiness, ups and downs, but it's just part and parcel of it. So I think that was the lesson that she gave me, but she didn't intentionally say that, hey, you know, this is a tip for you. But it's the way that I observe her in handling situations, and for also the reputation and the popularity that she enjoyed in the bridge scene, is really testament that how you behave and conduct yourself on top of playing a good game would actually be very key to you having a wonderful and a happy journey in this bridge scene.
Sokning, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Thanks, Jocelyn.
And that's the show. Many thanks to our guest, Sokning Tan.
Thank you also to our Sorry Partner posse of listener supporters who make the show possible.
Sorry Partner is produced by Catherine Harris. Our theme music was composed by Jocelyn Starts and produced by Daniel Graboy.
Send your bridge stories and comments to sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com or send us a voice message. And please consider supporting the show. Join the Sorry Partner posse, purchase books through our site, explore the merch store. These links are in your app, on the website at sorrypartner.com, or wherever you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you, but be nice, or we'll call the director. Until next time, play well.
May all your finesses be on side. And remember, as Sokning says, don't underestimate the importance of composure at the table. Thank you, partner.
Thank you, partner.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.